Our last speaker is Christy Allgood. Christy received her MPH degree from the University of Chicago here, University of Illinois, here in Chicago. And she's currently a senior social epidemiologist at the Sinai Urban Health Institute in Chicago, an entity of the Sinai Health Systems, which is a safety net hospital in Chicago. Christy joined Sinai Urban Health in 2004, where she has developed, managed, and evaluated a successful breast health patient navigation program. Recently, this program has been translated to complement both HIV and hepatitis C screening programs in the hospital with the introduction of navigation for linkage to care. Christy?
Good morning. I don't have any financial relationships to disclose, just like everyone else. So I'm going to start today talking about the background of our program and what patient navigation is, or at least what it is to Sinai Health System. So we are trying to improve breast health services by incorporating lay health navigators, or community health workers acting as kind of lay navigators, or so they facilitate breast imaging diagnosis and get people to treatment when a cancer is found. This is in the area of mammography or breast imaging, so we focus on breast cancer, but it certainly could be translated to almost any screen-detectable cancer. But what they do is they schedule appointments, they follow up after a missed appointment, which happens quite often. We escort patients around the hospital, so Mount Sinai is a very old hospital. It's about 100 years old, about 8 miles west of here, and it's, you know, all of your appointments are all over the place in a lot of different rooms, so you kind of need help and guidance through the system. They also provide social support during a biopsy, which is really critical in the program. So if someone's afraid of a diagnosis or going through a biopsy, they'll be there with them, hold their hand, talk about their kids or whatever to just distract them from the procedure being done. They also try to reduce any controllable barriers, such as transportation or childcare or sometimes meal tickets, things like that. It's just the simple things. They provide a lot of education to our patients on the importance of following up on all these appointments, but there's also kind of room to add more health messaging if needed. And probably one of the largest things we do is help get those comparison films so that the radiologist doesn't have to do a second or third or fourth image, so it's less exposure to radiation during the diagnostic process. We also help with referrals because people don't always bring them in, so we'll help get them if they don't have it, or we'll help correct them so the procedure is that they're here for is done. And then we have one Spanish-speaking navigator, so we occasionally interpret in Spanish. So why do we really need a navigator? Well, there's a lot of barriers in safety net medicine. So we've seen throughout kind of research that there's plenty of documented variations in timeliness of follow-up after an abnormal mammogram. There's tons of barriers, which I'll go through in a minute. There are several visits are required between a primary care provider and the radiology center. They're not always in the same location, so you have to go back and forth. And then if there's a treatment needed, then you have another set of doctors that you have to go to. So there's just a lot of things. And always, not always are the next steps of care communicated well to the patient. So people don't always understand what the next steps are or why or how quickly they really need to kind of get through the process. But navigators can spend a lot more time with patients than a physician can. So we can also help link them to social services if needed or find kind of other more creative resources to remove some barriers. And one study suggested that a three-month delay in follow-up can actually increase or decrease survival by up to 12%. So timeliness is really important. By the time some patients come into our mammography center, they're already at a delay. So even before they have their screening, they've delayed care by quite a bit. Here are some of the examples of some of the barriers faced kind of at all levels. Some of the health system barriers, just poorly communicated or coordinated services. Like I said, ultrasound's on one floor, mammography's on another, the surgery's in a different place. Some of our services are in different buildings, so it's very complicated and hard to find your way. There's a lot of costly things that don't get covered, so sometimes the insurance plans or the early detection programs that provide free mammograms make kind of complicated rules, so it's hard for just an average everyday person to follow some of these things. And really, you need a lot of persistence to navigate the medical world, basically. And if you don't really have that kind of in you, you might just kind of just bail and not finish your follow-up. There's also some provider barriers. There's a lot of trust issues in this community with our patients and providers. And there's also, since the recommendations are constantly changing for mammography, there's varying opinions of the value of screening mammography. So some people say you need to do it every 2 years, some say every 1 year, and there's really not like a one group just saying this is the way it should be done, and then everybody just follows it. So there's a lot of confusion on mammography. But there's also a lot of patient barriers. People are very frightened about having a diagnosis of breast cancer. They also have varying knowledge about mammography, about breast cancer, about treatment, things like that. And then there's tons of work and family responsibilities. We all have them that get in the way of care. So I don't want you to look at every little box here. I know that this is incredibly complicated. And the point isn't really so you see kind of how the flow is. This is actual data from our program. But I just want to show you how complicated it is to go through from a screening mammogram all the way down to a cancer diagnosis, which are those bottom hot pink boxes. So sometimes people have to go through 4, 5, 6 appointments between their primary care provider and the radiology center just to get a diagnosis. This hasn't even started treatment yet. So people have a lot of persistence to complete a follow-up, and it's really important that they do so, because if they do have a cancer, that'll be diagnosed faster. We can get them into treatment really fast. But if you kind of think about this kind of bizarre picture, is every little box or circle is a visit the patient has to go to somewhere, either, well, these are all in radiology. And then the lines between them, they have to go to a primary care provider, get a new referral, come back to the radiology center, and then get another image. So there's tons of room for people to get lost in the shuffle of all of these different appointments. So as I mentioned, our program, we have 2 full-time lay navigators. They're actually here today. They identify patients through our sort of semi-electronic medical record. It's not a full EMR, but it's close enough. And then they start initiating follow-up, sometimes even before the primary care providers have the results. So they'll call the doctors, let them know that there's an abnormal mammogram, and then they'll also call the patient and tell them what the next steps are, that they need to reach out to their doctor to get a referral and kind of start that process really, really quickly. They also can explain the recommendations that the radiologists suggest in the reports and what the next steps are, and then at that same time they can schedule the appointments. But most of the work is done behind the scenes, so they're not literally sitting in front of a patient. They'll be on the phone, or they'll be on the phone with the doctors, or they'll be walking around the hospital trying to coordinate all of these different things. So,
sorry.
Okay.
They're
non-clinicians, and they did not have to have any training in breast health before they started working with us. It wasn't a requirement.
And they don't have to be licensed?
No. Okay. Not yet, at least. So we have 3 kind of major goals of the program. One is to decrease loss to follow-up after an abnormal mammogram. The other is to expedite follow-up for diagnosis and treatment. And the overarching kind of issue is to improve the quality of services and keep people engaged in that entire process, whether they have breast cancer or not. Sure. So they are not. They are, but they're funded externally by the Avon Foundation. Yeah, the hospital at this point can't afford. It's a safety net hospital, so we have a very large uninsured population, very large Medicaid share for our payer mix. So. It's kind of a stretch to support some of these services that don't bring money back in. So this is kind of our program flow. Basically, we started that screening, like I said earlier, and we follow the navigation really begins once an abnormal finding is documented in the medical record, and then they'll just start following up by calling everybody, getting them back in until either a routine mammogram is recommended or there's a diagnosis of breast cancer. So facilitate the initial steps in treatment, and then we kind of hand the case off to our oncology center because they have a whole system set up where the navigators don't really need to kind of get involved, and they seem to be working pretty well. Our targets are from the time of an abnormal mammogram to start treatment is 120 days, so it's really quick. It's very hard to reach sometimes. So we do want to look at from the abnormal mammogram to a diagnosis. We want that to occur within 60 days, and then the diagnosis to starting treatment in another 60 days, and that's really our goal. It's not a requirement. It's just something that we kind of set for ourselves. So I'm going to talk about some of our process measures, our activities that we do. We have the navigators begrudgingly collect a lot of data on all of the things that they do for our patients. It's very time intensive, and I'll show you some things about that. We also track the number of new patients because that is our caseload, essentially. Some of our outcomes we'll be discussing in timeliness of follow-up at various points in care, and those will all be in days. And then we look at our loss to follow-up rate, meaning a person didn't return for any follow-up within 12 months. So first I'll start with the activities. So this is the time spent with our patients. The kind of the 50 per, the half circle part, the 50% is the time they're actually in front of the patient. So about half of their work, their normal work days are spent in front of some patients. So they'll escort, support during biopsies, arranging transportation, getting them the financial assistance they need if they don't qualify for insurance or their insurance doesn't cover whatever they're there for. They also call and make appointment reminders. They'll do some interpretation and medical assistance, describing how to, you know, change bandages and things like that after biopsies. In addition to that, there's another 29% of their time spent calling. So they're on the phone, calling the doctors, calling the other radiology centers, getting films, helping kind of facilitate the referrals and make sure that the referral that comes to the hospital has the order that's supposed to be done for that day and things like that. So they're really just kind of making sure that the appointments are scheduled, the referrals are correct for what the service is, and then kind of triage any problems that arise when the patient is at the hospital. So we do have a lot of repeated patients. We're a very high-volume center. So I think we see about 15,000 patients a year for screening mammograms, and another couple thousand for diagnostics. So the navigators have a lot of face time with the patients. So about half of them, they see the navigators or they interact with the navigators about 2 to 5 times. And then you can see there's a few patients that are very friendly with the navigators and are there 21 to 30 times. They're very nice people, very nice. This is our caseload. So these would just be the number of new patients. Each month per full-time navigator. So basically that kind of dark line in the middle is where we started seeing some changes in our program from the volume changes in the radiology center. So very early on we had about 20 to 23 patients per navigator per month kind of coming into the mix of their caseload. And then something changed in 2012 where the caseload just started increasing and increasing and increasing. And we also started seeing our loss to follow-up rate increasing and increasing and increasing. Right now, I don't have the 2015 data yet, but it's because at the end of the year, I can do that. So this is just the last couple years. Well, it's the whole time. Actually, we started navigation in 2005, so this is our 10th year doing this. So you can kind of see that caseload really jumped up in the last couple years. And there are reasons for this. First, in 2012, we hired a new radiologist who has specialized training in mammography, and they tend to recall more patients, meaning they have to come back in for more services. We also had a second fellowship-trained radiologist come on board just recently, and you kind of can see that the effect of our caseload on that. In addition, during that time, we switched all of our analog or film-based machines to digital, which also has a substantial increase in volume, so a lot more patients are able to be seen on those machines. But this translated to a 230% increase in their caseload. So it's really hard for two navigators to manage this many patients. This is our loss to follow-up rate. So the blue bar are the whole bar is the abnormal volume at that time. And then the kind of purpley part is the patients who were lost to follow-up. So the very first bar in 2005 was our baseline year. We didn't have navigators at that point. And about 30% of them were lost to follow-up without any assistance. Once the navigator started, there was an immediate drop in our loss to follow-up rate, and it was down hovered around 8% until 2010 and 11, when we really dropped it down to under 5%. And then in 2012, like I said, when those volumes started increasing, so did our follow-up rates. This is our timeliness of care. And really, we've always kind of stayed within our goal. This is the first year, the 2014 year is the first year that we've actually seen an increase, and I'm going to show that next. But we've been able to kind of maintain our timeliness within our goals for the entire time, which has been really great because these are very hard-to-reach patients. They're not the ones who just kind of come because they get the letter and they show up and they do everything the way the doctors want them to. They're the very hard-to-reach patients. There's language barriers. They don't understand the letters that go out sometimes. They don't know that an abnormality is not a cancer diagnosis. It's a, you know, you have to do a lot of kind of education on these sorts of things. So this is just the last year, so in 2014. The line kind of flattens out at about 30 to 32 days, and then it jumps really high in July. And what happened in July is we had an entirely new radiology staff come in. They had a third machine installed, and all of this changed all of the volumes and all of the patients who were coming back, and it jumped significantly in the last 6 months. So it went from about 35 days to get a person back into the first follow-up visit up to 48 days. Now, we're already pushing our goal because we want them actually diagnosed. This is just one visit. This isn't all of the visits. But we want them diagnosed within 60 days. So this is almost an impossible task to reach at this point. So in conclusion, our navigator activities, their navigators are spending about 71% of their time in front of patients or working behind the scenes on behalf of the patients. Half of the patients that we see have more than one encounter with the navigators. There's tons of opportunities for the navigators to provide extra health messaging, not just on breast health, but on other things, and to build a relationship with the patients. But there's probably also a threshold of where the navigators just can't take on any more patients. And I think that at least with our data, it shows that anything under 32 patients per month per navigator is really all they can really handle in order to complete those loss, and, you know, improve our loss to follow-up rate and make sure that our timeliness stays within our goal. But the reality is the navigators face the exact same barriers that the patients do. They just happen to have a little bit more finesse and ability to kind of sneak through some of those barriers within the system barriers. Like they have to call and schedule the appointments for the patients. And in order to do that, they still have to go through central scheduling just like everybody else does. But they're, you know, they know people in the system, so they're able to kind of creatively find solutions to those things. And then the demand for diagnostic services are just, you know, crushing our numbers a little bit, and that can create longer wait times for the follow-up services to happen. So basically because the last year was so rough on our outcomes, we were given an opportunity within the hospital system to do a Lean Six Sigma improvement program to correct these delays. Because we saw this increasing volume, we started seeing patients being moved out and out and out farther away. And you can't really maintain any outcomes and timeliness if a person can't get an appointment for 2 or 3 months. So we decided to kind of figure out what the actual problems were, these small little things that we could correct right away, and then create more of evidence-based recommendations to solve the bigger problems that might need some investment. And the benefit of having this kind of program is it's a hospital board-driven program, so they're willing to fund some of these things that they wouldn't have before. But everything is based on data collection, evaluating the findings and the bottlenecks and finding what those things are. And we're about 4 months into a six-month project, so we're hoping this will end soon and we'll be able to get patients in a lot faster. This is the first time we've ever had a delay or had to wait for an appointment more than a week or two. So it's become a big problem, not just for our program, but also for our community-based program, which brings people from the community to screening. And I think that might be it. Yeah, that's it.
Any questions?
So the oncology center at our hospital, we have a breast clinic where we just see breast cases. They have social workers and navigators within the oncology center. And the navigator's primary role is to figure out or find sources of funds so that they can be funded for the care. Medicaid is pretty comprehensive in Illinois, so they can get most of the treatment they need for cancer. The problem is when someone is undocumented. And then they have to go through our financial services department and qualify for charity care. And if they do qualify for that, then, you know, it's their decision if they want to stay or go to Cook County Hospital for care, which would be no cost to them, I think. Okay, go ahead.
And
So the integration has been a big challenge for us, I think. They do work side by side with the radiology group. Their office is located in imaging. So even though I'm a researcher, we've been kind of letting radiology kind of manage the program. So they supervise the team, the navigators, and they have some influence on what we can or can't do. I mean, the grant does do that too, but we talk a lot. So that's about, I would say they talk to the physicians more than anybody in the group. So they're pretty integrated. They were also trained by our radiologists. So they day one were kind of brought into the mix right away. But they are grant funded, so they do have kind of there's a perception that they have a lot of resources that they don't really have. Yes. Yeah. So we don't have a real EMR, so it's more complicated. We've been trying to integrate some of the things that we've been collecting through kind of Excel spreadsheets or things like that into our EMR so the physicians have access to what they do. But that's been a long journey to get there, and it's complicated. But they do have logs that they track all of their stuff on, and then it gets input whenever they have a chance to do it.
So they input their own data into.
Yeah. The mammography, all of the medical things, like the mammogram appointments, all of that stuff is not tracked by hand. That's tracked by the hospital.
Right.
Their activities, yeah, they do. And they hate it.
Go ahead. So maybe going back a little bit to when things got started and a little bit on that care team question, how did the referrals work, and how did you work with the physicians and the radiologists to make sure that those referrals were happening?
So the referrals just kind of go through the normal process. So if someone has an appointment, they go through central scheduling, they'll schedule an appointment. The navigators will receive the referrals as a fax. I know we're still using faxes. It's an old hospital. So they'll have a copy of that with them. They also scan the referrals into the medical record. So if the patient does, I shouldn't say it's all the time. The main primary care providers have access to our medical records, but not everybody does. We're just kind of connected to each other.
So the primary care physicians are the ones who say, okay, we did the, breast exam, we need to send you to radiology,
right.
And then that's when the referral happens?
Yep.
And so what did the education process of the physicians look like when this program started?
So in the very beginning, we had a kind of I wouldn't call it a task force, but we had an oncologist, a surgeon, a primary care provider, radiology, some managers and executives at the hospital kind of involved in the planning process, and they all had input on what we were going to do, how they were going to train them, what we were going to collect, things like that. So that's kind of where it all started. But that was a long, long time ago now. Yeah. Gentlemen.
Curious what happened around 2012. Was there, and what the referral trend was over the whole time period, 2005 until now, and were there changes operational?
So it's more operational. I don't think so. The volume of mammograms have remained relatively constant when we went to digital. So it's been around 12 to 15,000 every year mammograms. And then what's gone up, though, is the patients with abnormal findings. That's the only change we've seen. And some of it's related to the better equipment, and some of it's related to physicians with more training, and they'll just bring more patients in, or they'll call them back in. At higher rates. So that's where we saw a lot of the volume shift. It wasn't in referrals or anything like that. It was more in the recall of abnormals.
So that's part of the new radiology team?
So in 2012, we had one new radiologist come in with a fellowship, and she recalled a lot more than the prior group. And then in 2014, they changed the entire group, and we have a whole new set of doctors, and that always kind of messes up the mix a little bit because they're all working differently than we were all used to. So.
Do you have countermeasures in place to deal with not meeting your goal rate?
No. Still just, we're a small program within the hospital, so the big control measure is this Lean Six Sigma program where the board and the quality improvement department is involved in that. So it's kind of at a much higher level than just a researcher can handle. So I do sit on the improvement program just in case, just to make sure, like, my program is protected. But, yeah, so a lot of these things are just changes in scheduling or how many limiting the appointments that mammogram, you know, limiting the diagnostic services we have, things like that, and they make a big impact kind of down the line.
So no plans to increase the number of navigators?
I would love to. I'm sure they would love to. No, I mean, funding is a big problem. So we're Avon funded, and it's a big problem to be externally funded.
I think we have time for a few more questions.
So related to cost, have you done an ROI on the navigators in terms of either cases of breast cancer detected that wouldn't have been or in early stages that would have been later?
We have, so as part of this grant, we look at the kind of the medical audit side of a mammography and how well the radiologists detect cancers over time. But we don't look at cost or anything like that. That's out of my skill set, I think. But it's something that we'd like to do because we have now, we have a lot of data now. It's 10 years worth of data. So yeah, I think it's probably time to move it to the next level. Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah, so, you know, normally people aren't looking at these sorts of things because it's not a core measure. It's not something hospitals are always looking at for this timeliness. But because we have this grant and it's part of our outcomes of the grant, we then, you know, share it with just about every administrator who will listen. So we feel that, I mean, I can't say it's causal, but I can say that the fellowship radiologists that did come in were related to our findings. So we got better radiologists, better equipment because of the things that we were finding. Go ahead. Yeah, so they've done, see, around 2005 or so, maybe a little later, they did clinical trials of patient navigators. They were small samples, but they did still show an effect. Our data suggests that loss to follow-up is really the thing that we can correct with our navigators. Timeliness, you know, there's a lot more things at play with the schedule and things like they just don't have a lot of control over, but they can bring people back in. Well, they are, so that's part of the Lean Six Sigma group. So people with a lot more skills than I have with money and dealing with that are working on those things. That's also part of the program. But they have talked about kind of shifting where, so currently everything is very centralized at our hospital, and they're thinking of moving the screening out so that they can focus more on the diagnostic services in, and then screening can be kind of in the community where it'll be easier to access. I don't know if that'll make a difference in the changes, or that change will make a difference, but that's something at least they're talking about. So they're doing that. As far as bringing in more navigators, that's just funding driven, completely funding driven. Right, it is. So the this thing's about to die. I track their quality data, so I let them know kind of where they stand as far as those things go. The radiologists believe that the high recall rate is more related to the request for prior films and not really abnormal. So there's a substantial part of that group that are just waiting for films to come back in from other institutions, and then they'll most likely be benign mammograms. So there are a little false positive mammography, but a lot of those women won't be coming back in for services, won't need to. So we're looking at it.